Hey there, welcome back to the Path to Zion podcast, where we are rediscovering the ancient way. Thank you for joining us today over on PathToZion.com. If you like the audio only, or if you are watching the video on our YouTube channel, following us through Facebook, thank you for joining the program today. Now, if you've been tuning into our morning commentaries, you will know that we just talked about 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 18, and this verse really spearheaded the thoughts that I want to share today on the program, which is talking about righteous men and how there is this theme of endurance unto salvation. We will be delivered and we will be saved if, in fact, we are deemed righteous by Yahweh, but it will be with great difficulty. And of course, we've been talking about that through the consideration of just different goings on throughout the entire earth right now that thankfully, and I think for our good, have got people's attention a little bit. It's good for all of us to be reminded of our brevity, of our vaporness that is a life. And I think it's great that we have opportunities given to us from the Father to consider our ways and think through some deeper matters and have some introspection in our lives. We're going to talk about that some today, but primarily we're getting right back into Bible study. And what we're going to talk about is righteous men are saved and delivered with great difficulty. I'm going to explain as I go where we're going to land. Some of the commentary that I posted, it was just yesterday, was as follows. I'll read some of that, and that is a launching pad, if you will, to where we're going to head today. I would submit that we've focused on the latter part of this verse in 1 Peter chapter 4 for far too long, because if we read it in its entirety, now if it is with great difficulty for the righteous to be saved and delivered, what shall become of the ungodly and the sinner? Now, most of us have been in a belief system where, you know, we go out and evangelize the ungodly, the sinner, and we tell them they're hellbound. We've told them they're apart from God and, you know, bound for an eternal damnation judgment. And there has been a lot of energy put towards that. Let's just simplify. If we take this verse and we put it into two compartments, one being the first part, which is the fact that with great difficulty, the righteous will be saved and delivered, would be part one. And part two is the ungodly and the sinner. Part two has had way more attention than part one. I would say, as we will get to in the commentary here, I think that we have been a bit presumptuous. We read this verse, we talk about this kind of mindset all the time here. We read this verse and we presume, just often very casually, that we are in the camp of the righteous. And whoever else comes to my mind are the ungodly and the sinner. We are righteous, and so this part is for us, and the other, oh, well, if it's hard for me, a righteous man, what in the world will become of the poor, wretched, ungodly, and the sinner? Let's go out and win the world for Jesus, right? But I want to park today on the former part, the first half, if you will, of this statement of being great with great difficulty that the righteous will be saved and delivered. I think it would do us well to just stay here for some time and take our harsh critique off of the ungodly ones, off of the sinners, and whoever we think that may be. And I'm not saying they're not out there. Of course they are. Of course, we might say that's us, depending. We don't throw a blanket that covers like everyone who might tune into this program and just be presumptuous ourselves to say, yeah, well, we're all righteous. No, and that's where we're going to get to today as we talk about righteous men that are saved and delivered. We need to be careful that we don't just read these verses and assume that we are individually or even corporately in the more favorable camp. It would be good for us to make sure that we're not just assuming the best for us and moving on again without much consideration of really, well, who am I? And according to what criteria? So that being said, number one, as I'm already segueing in, are we even sure which category we are individually found within? What is the criteria that we have applied to arrive at this conclusion? So, in other words, according to what, according to whom, are we righteous? What pushes us into the camp of righteousness and not into the camp of the ungodly and the sinner? I think that's a very good place we have to start, is according to what criteria? Are we talking about the word of Elohim in its entirety? Are we talking about how we line up with biblical examples of righteous men who went before us, which is where the majority of this today, which will be long, by the way, that's where we're going to go, is with a biblical example, an account of a righteous set apart man. And do we even know what standards Yahweh uses to apply the term righteousness to any man? Despite what we've been told, it is with great difficulty that even the righteous man is delivered, saved, and rescued. So I would say from the very beginning, let's do whatever is individually necessary for us today to be sure that we're righteous according to what Yahweh himself has always defined that to be. What are his terms? What is Yahweh's definition according to the Torah and the prophets, according to the entirety of the scriptures? And according to within those, more specifically, we can look at literal records of the lives of righteous men. And in this case, we are going to go through a literal list of some of those attributes, which I think will be beneficial for us. This is very practical today. And so we want to make sure that we are in the right camp first and foremost. And what we have to ask ourselves, well, how do I know I'm righteous? Because I inherited a belief that just said, well, there's no good in me. All of my works are filthy rags. I can't do anything I'm not trying, even if the verbiage is we're not trying to earn our salvation, that's what's insinuated even when we talk about works at all. On the other side of salvation, which I believe is future, but like once we have whatever we want to call it, this encounter with Yahweh, the creator of the earth and the sky and every single thing that we know, when he draws us to a place and he leads all men to himself, I mean, nobody goes and finds God. He draws us first. And through the conviction of Holy Spirit, we are led to the door, Yeshua Messiah, and we are told how to go in through him unto the Father. And repentance is key. And so whatever we call that place, not necessarily a moment, because I believe, as I've said for 20 years now, what I heard in a sermon back then was the sign of how a man has truly repented is that he is still a man who is repenting. I think that's an excellent phrase. I intend to hold on to that one the rest of my days. Is the sign is not that we made a decision when we were 12 or when we're 45, but in fact that we are walking out a life of being sanctified and changed into the likeness of the Son, where we are continually in a procession, an ongoing unfolding for the rest of our days, process of what? Repentance, which is returning, the teshuvah reality, returning to what? How to be a righteous man. We've not known. And how would we know? We're Gentile goyim, ways of the nation's people. We've not been taught. We don't know. We are just like those in the book of Acts who are coming out of their pagan idolatrous ways and being taught how to walk by the Jerusalem Council through the heart of the Torah to say, this is where you start, friends. This is what we're doing. This is what we, I believe, in this generation are doing as we're waking up to this ancient way understanding. And so we have to solidly be identifiable as righteous, okay? Like we have to solidify that we are in fact righteous according to biblical criteria. And then this will help posture us to be ready to endure well. And then we can go out and then after that is resolved and matured in, I would say, we can go out and beckon the ungodly and call forth the sinner to come and do likewise, which is what the words of Shaul Paul, follow me as I'm following the Messiah. That's a very reputable function to fill, right? We talked about that in the men's Zoom meeting last night about the beautiful invitation, whether you call it an ambassador or whether you call it an agent of the gospel. Excuse me. Call it what we want to. Are we rightful representatives in the lineage of Yahweh's offspring, of his people, walking as in the likeness of our firstborn of many brethren, our brother, Messiah Yeshua, Ben Elohim, the Son of the Most High, the Son of the Almighty, the pattern, the firstborn, first fruits pattern of all men who would follow to be righteous as he was to the utmost. But before we do that, okay, we have to address at least briefly what else Peter is speaking about in this 1 Peter chapter 4 text, because we're just reading verse 18 of chapter 4. But right before that, he says this, quote, "For it is time for judgment to begin at the household of Elohim." We know this verse. "And if it begins with us, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of Elohim?" Now, we're not going to spend time here because we've got to move along. I've got three pages from here on. But this is what precedes verse 18 in chapter 4 of 1 Peter. Judgment's coming to the household of Elohim. And if it begins here in the household of Elohim, what in the world is going to, what will this mean? What will this judgment be, the outcome of the judgment be for those who do not obey the gospel of Elohim? Now, we've talked about that on the program before, what it means to obey the gospel, and like this theme of obedience is woven like an intricate fabric throughout the entirety of the testaments, of the covenants, new covenant, old covenant, old new testaments. This obedience is inescapable within what? The gospel. You must obey the gospel, okay? Yeshua, the Messiah, I can't remember where the verse is. We can post it after we find it and when we edit the video, that Yeshua became salvation for all who would obey him. Okay? Same type of language. The gospel, friend, is to be obeyed. And the gospel did not start in the book of Acts. It didn't start at the foot of the cross. It didn't start on the other side of the stone that was rolled away in Yeshua's tomb. The gospel has been going forth since humanity was in need of it, okay? It is ancient old. Now, we've talked about that in the past before we move on from this verse here. How does one obey the gospel? All I'm doing today is putting questions out for you to ponder on in case you haven't before. Most of you have already settled these things, I'm sure, but most of us have thought, well, I thought I just received the gospel, the gift of the good news. It's just a gift, and I just take it, and I receive it, and this goes back to our point moments ago where, well, we are saved and delivered. We're saved and delivered. It's all spontaneous. It's all instantaneous. We receive the gift of the gospel, and we go on. And that is our sanctification. That is our righteousness. It's only Yeshua's gift of righteousness that is, we've talked about this in past episodes, are these things imputed or imparted? Or how do we get these things? Is there anything for us to do now? Or is it a one package deal in a gift form that simply we open and then all of a sudden we're changed in fullness? These are good things to think about. The Greek here, though, in this word is really disobey. Okay, so we could say, what will be the outcome for those who disobey the gospel of Elohim? Do not obey or disobey. The word in the Greek specifically is disobey. So in other words, what about those who disobey the gospel? Now, isn't that intriguing wording if we're going to read it correctly and how it was intended, I believe? It is rightly understood to mean this, if we elaborate on the Greek words and the usage there within the definitions. It is rightly understood to mean one who refuses belief and does not comply with the gospel. Well, that's a little bit different verbiage than just receiving a gift or rejecting a gift. I would say, even here in the Greek, which is kind of, the Greek language is, I don't know a lot of Greek understanding, but it's like, it's got some things that are just, I don't know if that's really what that meant. if you go to the Hebrew Gospels, you can find it online, read the original manuscripts, and a lot of those things will bring clarity to some things that are in the Gospels that don't really seem to make much sense. Now, of course, we're talking about 1 Peter here, but, you know, obedience. I'm talking about that because it's in the Greek, disobey, okay? So, to understand it rightly, if you don't comply with the gospel, what in the world kind of judgment is coming to these, okay? So the question is, and we're throwing questions out now as we get rolling here, how do you not comply with the gospel? How do you disobey the gospel? Why does this matter? Because we're fixing to really talk about righteousness and how to be a righteous man, okay? Obedience is always the key attribute of the righteous men that were chosen by Yahweh, okay? Always. Righteous men that were chosen by Yahweh in a good sense. Yahweh orchestrates his enemies to carry out his bidding. We know that. But we're talking about like his set apart, called forth men, called out men who are part of his people, okay? To be specific, because people love to critique everything that I say on the program, trying to be full and fair. So moving on from that commentary, okay, that was basically my commentary yesterday morning. And this that I'm about to share built on top of that greatly, and I had to really scale it down for today. So about an hour after I posted what I just shared in text form, a rainbow appeared here at our house. Now keep in mind that yesterday was the day of the eclipse, so there's a lot going on, a lot of buzz around the entire earth on, you know, apocalyptic thoughts and wonderings, and I myself thought there's a whole long, lengthy list of very intriguing coincidences within what's going on. I shared about how we are already watching the heavens in our house over the last 14 months or so, more than we ever have before. And so really, you know, seeking what the Father was saying and listening, because we, as I've shared already recently, we believe the heavens are declaring, they're speaking, they're revealing knowledge if we believe the Genesis account. And so yesterday was the scheduled eclipse day. It rained and it was dark here, so who knows. But before all that happened, in the morning time, we had a rainbow when I was outside, just walking around praying and looking out the window when I was inside because it was kind of a dreary day. Intriguingly to me, on a day where the heavens were surely garnering much more attention than a normal day, a rainbow appeared here where I live. And it really got me to thinking because, again, I wrote the commentary that I just read in part, and then I see a rainbow. And so with my ongoing understanding of the Hebrew word sign, which is ot, you hear me talking about it all the time the last 6 months. This is always at the front of my mind towards Passover and circumcision, the rainbow, and all these things. If you watch the program, you're tired of me talking about, I'm sure. And so then I have this appearance of the rainbow, the sign, the ot in the heavens, on the same day of the eclipse. And so I began to meditate upon just this incredible sign that a rainbow is. And I began to just thank Father for his ways, his covenantal ways, that he gives us signs even in the heavens to remind himself. Remember how we covered that not too long ago? It was a sign hung in the heavens to remind him of his covenant. And it's also when we, of course, get to see it, we're reminded of his awesome covenantal ways and his promises. It's beautiful. His signs are incredible. And so I was thinking about this reality of this sign in the heavens right here in my neck of the woods. Covenant was in the sky, a reminder of that. And so here, the aforementioned obedience to the gospel principle is the perfect lead-in to what I believe Peter would present. Okay, so just stick with me for a second. I'm gonna do a little bridge here between where I've been the last 19 minutes and where we're headed. I think if Peter could give us a sermon right now, based off of what we talked about if it's with great difficulty for the righteous to be saved and delivered, I think that if he were going to present us a sermon today, he would have likely landed with the account of Noah as a perfect example of this biblical truth that he shared in chapter 4, verse 18. So I thought it would be very beneficial for us to take a few minutes here today and do just that? What if we could create a sermon of sorts and see an example of this text in the life of a real, I believe, a real individual, a real man, a real ambassador of Yahweh's ways upon the earth in a very, very dark age? Noah, what an incredible time to look into his life as we talk about an example of a righteous man being saved and delivered with great difficulty, okay? So for starters, obedience and righteousness are inseparable in the scriptures. Doesn't really matter who we pluck out and look at. That is a key component. Those two things working together, operating at the same time together, are a sign, a marker of a man who is fulfilling Father's purposes on the earth. In fact, it's no wonder, I would say, that the Hebrew word for righteous first appears in Genesis chapter 6, okay? When is this? Well, when Noah appears. When Noah comes into view, the very first biblical mention of the word righteous is with Noah in Genesis. Now, verse 8 tells us that Noah, quote, found favor in the eyes of Yahweh. This is in here, I believe, a couple times. I think it's in chapter 6 and in chapter 7. And as we continue reading, we see the record of his offspring. And then we're told several key points here that I just want to bring up for you. Okay, and so we're going to hit these 5 points here. And we're just going to talk about them. And again, we're talking about righteous men are saved and delivered. And we're looking at a pattern of a man that we are shown in the word of Elohim, who fulfilled some incredible requirements and attributes. He possessed some incredible attributes that marked him as a unique man who was postured and ready to be a representative of Yahweh upon the earth in human form, okay? That we have this pattern all throughout the Word of men who perfectly fulfilled the function that Father had them on the earth to accomplish during their lifetime. And friend, why are we reading all this? Why are we even talking about this? So that we can do likewise. So that we can be those men today. And we can posture our children to be those individuals as they grow up and mature and change. Okay, so you see these here on the screen, these main points here. Genesis chapter 6 primarily and a little bit into 7. But we see that Noah was a righteous man. Noah was blameless in his generation. Noah walked with Elohim. He found grace in Yahweh's sight. So what we're going to do is we're going to take some of these here and we're going to just walk through them a little bit and talk about how a lot of people love looking back at biblical characters and seeing things that they did, but often we forget, well, how did they get to that place? What were they doing? Who were they? Who were they not? What were they not participating in that positioned them to be the men that we look back at and marvel? And we say, oh, if I could only be like Moses, or if I could only be like David, or if I could only be like Noah. Well, friend, okay, well, let's just not make that some dream. Let's study their lives and say, well, how did he become that way? Okay, as you see here on the screen, Noah was righteous. And he was just, okay? Those are the same words in the Hebrew. We're going to unpack them a little bit as we go. He found grace and favor from Yahweh, okay? From Yahweh. We don't see a whole lot of that with men. He was in a tough predicament there in his lifetime. He was blameless and perfect. We read perfect in the Word and we say nobody was ever perfect but Jesus. Well, friends, then we don't understand perfect because perfect was a blameless, spotless, presentable to Yahweh condition. Okay, number 4 is Noah did all that Yahweh commanded him. This is very important. Yahweh said, do this. Noah did that. Very much Messiah-esque in the sense of how he carried out obedience after obedience after obedience. He was simply a man who did what he was told. He carried out works as he was commanded to do them. And lastly, we'll see, most importantly, he was, because of the first 4, I would say, he was remembered by Yahweh, which is what? Here we are. He was saved and he was delivered. Why? I would say because of the first 4 things. We will unpack them as we go. So some of these incredible attributes and actions of Noah, I believe we can examine and see that he's been given to us to be this prototype of sorts that fulfills the examples that we need to apprehend in our own lives towards 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 18, which again states, it's with great difficulty that the righteous will be saved and delivered. Noah is the perfect example of a man who did just that. Okay? So let's walk through these, not just for mere historical sake, okay? We're just not talking Bible history here, but rather for insight in how we can live today. Make this personally applicable to you, friend. Put yourself right here and ask, how do I implement these attributes in my life? Why? So that we can be righteous men who are saved and delivered, expecting what? These trials, these challenges, great difficulties to come as we are what? Working out our salvation, our deliverance, okay? So, first mention of righteous, we already mentioned this just a moment ago, the very first mention of the word righteous in the entirety of the Bible is right here with Noah. It is, in the Hebrew, it is tzaddik, and it's basically just saying he, Noah, was just, okay? He was lawful, okay? Lawful, not lawful. Let's put some emphasis where it needs to be. He was lawful, okay? In an entire generation of humanity, okay, we've got to get this through our minds. In an entire generation of fallen, depraved, evil, continually mankind, okay, who we can properly define, as the word does, lawless, Noah, the righteous man Noah, was lawful, okay? And again, I'm going to say this probably 15 times the rest of this message here today. We know that Yeshua said, as in the days of Noah, as in the days of Noah, so it shall be. There was mixing and there was lawlessness. And the righteous man who was saved, rescued, and delivered with great difficulty was lawful. Okay? We have to really just like turn up the volume, turn down the lights out here, and put it on a table with a spotlight and say, this is righteousness. Righteousness is lawfulness. Lawfulness, okay? It is not lawlessness, okay? And that is such a clear distinction in the age of Noah, because the whole earth had gone their own way. So much so that we know in the preceding verses that we're not covering today, right before Noah comes on the scene, Yahweh's saying, you know what? He's repenting of even creating humanity, friend. He is sorry he even made man because they are so depraved and lawless. So what does he do? We know the scriptures tell us that Yahweh's eyes roam to and fro, what? Looking for anyone whose heart is towards him. So here we are, we're constantly disproving all this filthy rags works. It doesn't matter what you do, you can never earn anything. Waste of time doing works, waste of time doing lawful deeds, righteous deeds, silliness. I'm in Jesus now. Friend, what did we just say? His eyes were roaming the earth. That's the Bible. Yahweh's eyes, I believe they still are looking upon the earth, looking throughout the earth for what? Whose hearts are towards him. Noah's heart was towards Yahweh, and it looked like these things. He was righteous and just. He found grace and favor. He was blameless and he was perfect. He did all that Yahweh commanded him. Yahweh took notice of this as his eyes are roaming throughout the earth. And what? Yahweh remembered Noah. Okay? These are very, very important principles for us to get through our minds as we try to figure out what we're to do here. In our age, in our version of this same thing, because we're told, ramping up to the end of the age, Yeshua warned us, look, this is coming back again. The mixing's coming. Lawlessness is coming. Be like Noah, okay? I think that's what Peter, again, we're trying to be, this is, if Peter were given a sermon, this is what it would be, I believe, to use Noah as an example. So, first mention, tzaddik, righteous, right here with Noah. Okay, so we must remember that Torah, okay, which is Yahweh's instructions, his law, his instructions. It's not a bad word. His Torah, his law on how to live, was clearly intact in Noah's day. Some people need to really let that sink in. When I started gaining this understanding only a few years ago, I'm like, oh. I saw the perpetuity of what had always been. And all my dispensational doctrine walls started breaking down and burning up in the flames of the truth of the word. Okay, mixing was all over the place. Noah, we know, was aware of clean animals. He took different amounts of clean animals onto the ark. Okay, he came off of the ark. What did he do? He was doing burnt offerings on an altar that he erected for Yahweh Elohim. Okay, moving on. Next mention of Tzaddik, righteous, appears with, Abraham. Okay, that's the very next time we see Tzaddik, righteous. Number two, on here, it's not going to match on there. He was blameless and perfect, okay? Noah was blameless and perfect. Now, this is first mention also. And this word in Hebrew, tamim, is meaning complete and whole. We touched on this a moment ago, like perfect is not, we think perfection is like you never do anything wrong. No man was perfect but Jesus. We don't understand the proper understanding of Hebrew tamim of perfection, because this is blameless, this is complete, this is whole, in accordance with truth. And then you start getting into clean animal sacrificial system language of without blemish, which what? Oh, Yeshua. That's what that means. Just like the sacrificial animals and just like a blameless, perfect man like Noah. Oh, here we are again, the perpetuity of Yahweh's ways through Yeshua and out the other side. So you have the imagery of sacrificial animals. I think that's good and easy for us to understand. Without blemish, perfect, acceptable unto Yahweh. And here's the most important one, meeting the Father's requirements. Okay, meeting Yahweh's requirements, just like the sacrificial animals. That's why Yeshua, I still have not got this recorded yet. This year's version of my Passover study was talking about, in part, this principle here about Yeshua, our Passover lamb was, anyway, I can't do that. That's going to have to be later. Next mention in the Bible in chronological order of this word, tamim, blameless, perfect, is Abraham, okay? Like, I love the word of Elohim and how these things flow. It's incredible. There's nothing like it in the whole world. Okay, Noah, he found favor and he found grace. First mention here in the Hebrew, right here, found favor and grace. Noah found grace in the eyes of Yahweh, and this does not appear anywhere before that. Which means this, favor and acceptance in the sight of another, okay? And it too can also be seen as acceptable. He found favor in Yahweh's sight. When? Again, as Yahweh is looking throughout the earth and he's regretting the condition of mankind and even their mere existence. But then all of a sudden, his eyes find righteous Noah. And Noah found favor in Yahweh's sight. He was deemed, here's an acceptable one, okay? Mixing, lawlessness, wickedness, violence. If we understand the Hebrew word of violence, it doesn't mean they were just beating each other up. There's much more to it than that. But Noah, what is he, friend? He's holy, okay? He's holy. He's kadosh. What is that? If you're new to the program, he's set apart. He's different. This righteous man, he doesn't look like the rest, okay? And thereby what? A righteous man is chosen by Yahweh because he found favor in Yahweh's sight, and he was saved and delivered through what? Great difficulty, okay? I believe we're on our last point here. Yes. He walked with Elohim. Noah walked with Elohim. The Hebrew word is halak. And this is exactly what one might expect. It's also seen, just for an example, of when Adam and Eve were walking in the cool of the day. They were you can't say halaking, but they were walking, okay? And so Noah walked with Elohim. In Genesis, when Yahweh called out to Adam and Eve, they were walking in the cool of the day. If you follow Jewish tradition, they call the way to walk is the halakha. That is how you walk. That is what you walk according to. That is your way of life, okay? It's pretty simple, nothing too deep here. And the last point is, through all of this, Yahweh remembered Noah, okay? He remembered. And we know from all the stuff we talk about here endlessly on the program, Yahweh loves to remember, and he loves to see people remember his ways. Remembrance in the word is a huge, huge, huge deal. So Noah was righteous. He was lawful. Lawful. He was blameless, perfect, which is what? Meeting all of Yahweh's requirements. And he walked thereby. He walked with Elohim. And he found favor and grace in Yahweh's sight. And because of all these things, Yahweh remembered this righteous man, Noah. So we're going to start moving towards a conclusion. Perhaps most importantly, Genesis chapter 7, verse 5 says, well, in it we see this, paraphrased, that Noah did all that Yahweh had commanded him. Okay, we see this in number 4 here. In another way to say this, according to the proper definition of did, because I'm like, well, did, surely there's got to be some more substance to this than Noah did all that Yahweh commanded. I wrote a lot towards this and took some out for the sake of time. But another way to say this that I think helps us get the point of this, and a lot of people in Christendom will not like this. Christendom will not like what I'm about to say. Because again, we've inherited a doctrine of filthy rags works. Works of righteousness are unknown. It's tainted. Works are so negatively seen and viewed in our age. But let's read this for what it says, and let the word be true and every man a liar. Genesis chapter 7, verse 5 says, Noah did all that Yahweh had commanded him. And another way to say this, according to the text of the proper definition of did, is Noah performed and Noah produced all that Yahweh had commanded him. Performed and produced, okay? That sounds a lot better, more substance to me than he did. This, I would say, needs highlighted, because this is why Noah was chosen. This is why Noah was chosen. It was all about his heart's posture. Yes, we just talked about that. These are all heart issues. People say, well, works are, God doesn't care about works. He doesn't care about works. It's all about the heart now. It's about the heart now in Jesus. Friend, I'm telling you, we talked about this last night in our Zoom meeting also. Circumcision, well, God doesn't care about all that now. Now, it's about the heart. Friends, look at the word. Study the word. Do a study for 6 months on circumcision. Circumcision of the heart, circumcision of the flesh. Always together. Together. When were they not? When you get to the non-believing Pharisaical Jews' Talmudic teachings, where those were separated. Okay? They were never separated in Yahweh's perfect, wonderful ways for his set-apart people. They were always meant, these things, to be signs of an inward heart condition, of the posture of our heart. There should be signs upon everything that we do that points to us being a set-apart covenant people. Okay? You can't separate the heart from the works. You can't. Okay, that's the way Yahweh designed it. We see that all over Noah's life, as we see, only to the text, Noah performed and produced all that Yahweh had commanded him. Okay, Yahweh commanded, Noah performed what was commanded, and he produced what had been required of him. It's not that complicated. He obeyed, which goes back to our beginning, of course. You can't separate righteousness and obedience. You can't separate the two. They are intricately connected. And so the thing is, yes, his heart's posture mattered. Yes, of course. But that led to something. His heart's posture produced something. It performed an action. Okay? a response of obedience. Literal works. Now, this, I would say, is evidence of who he was. The attributes that we just looked at here on the screen as we went through these. And because of these attributes, we can be in the pattern of Noah if we adopt them for ourselves. We can be in the pattern of Abraham if we adopt them into our own lives. We today. So because of men like Noah, like Abraham who preceded us, and we see the fruit of their righteous set-apart lives, producing righteous deeds, performing righteousness, we have evidence that we can look back on. And then we can say, huh, we could use that as a challenge, friend. Not as a wrongful conviction or something to incite guilt, but spurring us on to say, you know what? There's some things for us to perform. There's some things for us to produce, okay? Fruit and evidence that we are, in fact, set apart righteous men. If in fact we are, which goes back to our very beginning point, we need to determine according to Yahweh's criteria who we are. We cannot just assume we are righteous because I accepted Jesus when I was 12. Okay? Yeshua told the non-believing teachers that, listen, if you were the sons of Abraham, you'd be doing the works that Abraham did. Works are good, friend. Works are evidence that we're sons of Abraham. We talk about that a lot as well. Works of righteousness are evidence of a man who himself is defined by these attributes that we see here. Okay? I believe we could say the same of Noah as we bring this to a conclusion. If we're in the lineage of one who in an age of law, and I say in the lineage, in the pattern, you know, that's how men talked in the old covenant is, they talked about being the sons of David or the sons of Abraham. So like Noah, if we're in his lineage by our life, by the evidence of being righteous and set apart, in an age here now, our own version of lawlessness and mixing, we find in Noah's age a righteous, blameless man who walked with Elohim and performed and produced all that Yahweh commanded, we have to say, well, are we postured to be that way today? Right now in 2024 and the years to come, however many are left? If this is who we are, then we too will be postured to be saved and delivered in our age, because that's the covenantal promise of Yahweh. Yeshua himself told us again, this will precede his return. With great difficulty, again, we, if we are in fact righteous, we will be delivered. It's Yahweh's promise. It's his pattern. Just like righteous Noah. I want to finish by reading Proverbs chapter 28. We're going to read several verses, 1 through 10. It contains a very detailed list of wicked versus righteous comparisons. That I read this. I don't even remember how I landed there to make a connection here. Doesn't matter. Hopefully it'll work. So we're just going to read these 10 verses. The wicked flee when no one pursues, but the righteous are bold as a lion. When a land transgresses, it has many rulers. But with a man of understanding and knowledge, its stability will continue. A poor man who oppresses the poor is a beating rain that leaves no food. Those who forsake the Torah praise the wicked. Okay, here we are again. I have to interject and we'll keep moving. We're almost done. Those who are lawless, okay, Torah, law, instruction, how to live, righteous deeds, okay, what deem us pleasing, acceptable, perfect in Yahweh's sight. This is how to live, friend. This is what you do. It goes all the way back, all the way back. It's okay. Noah had Torah. Those who forsake the Torah praise the wicked, but those who keep the Torah strive against them. Verse 5. Evil men do not understand justice. Oh, just, righteous and just. Remember? But those who seek Yahweh understand it completely. Those who, what? are seeking Yahweh. His eyes are towards. He's drawn to. Why? Because we're looking for him. The lawless are down here in the nations of men. What are they doing? Living however they deem is right, free to live as they determine. What is best doesn't matter. We say, no law, lawless, evil continually. Evil is not just what we picture, this like ravenous beast of men, like, you know, raping and pillaging and stabbing each other all day long. That is not what this is saying. I don't believe, from looking into that years ago. Again, look into violence and violent in the Hebrew. It's much more broad than that. Continuing verse 5. Better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than a rich man who is crooked in his ways. The one who keeps the Torah is a son with understanding, but a companion of gluttons shames his father. Whoever multiplies his wealth by interest and profit gathers it for him who's generous to the poor. If one turns away his ear from hearing the Torah, even his prayer is an abomination. Whoever misleads the upright into an evil way will fall into his own pit, but the blameless will have a goodly inheritance. So without going in through this again and making this over an hour and dissecting each word, we see things, points we just covered all throughout this text in Proverbs chapter 28. Those who keep the Torah, you have this depiction of wicked and righteous, abominations. Those who turn away from even hearing the Torah, your prayers are abominations. I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be so lawless that my prayer to Yahweh is an abomination to his ears, friend. No, none of us want that. So to finish where we started, obedience and righteousness are always inseparable. What has always been is now, today, in this time frame, in this age of grace, it is what will be in the future. If we really do study and learn history and what will be in the days to come, in the prophesied age, we will see that there really is a very clear and a very distinct division among men. I believe it's going to become even more clear as we move along here. Now, it's going to get real gray in many other areas, but I think according to the word of Elohim, there's going to be a very distinct line, as we see in Revelation, of who the dragon comes after. Those who, what? We talked about this in the last episode, just days ago. Those who cling to the commandments of Yahweh Elohim and equally possess the testimony of Yeshua. Okay? There will be a very clear distinction for those who know what the word says is a set-apart righteous man. Okay? Those who are righteous, to use the biblical pattern of Noah to our all the way at the end here at the conclusion, those who are righteous in Yahweh's sight are men who are delivered and they are rescued. Because they are righteous and obey the commands of Yahweh, they are prepared to endure and inherit what? Salvation with great difficulty. You've been watching the Path to Zion podcast. We are rediscovering the ancient way. Thank you for tuning in for this long today. There's much good things to talk about. You can join into the discussion. Send us an email, pathdesignpodcast@gmail.com, anytime you want to. We would love to hear from you. Thank you so much for watching. Amen.